we will begin by opening a hearing on public hearing on Senate Bill 223. Mr. Malik.
I thought we were doing the high growth stuff today. That's why I was making all those jokes. I think that's serious.
Tomorrow.
I thought it was all the high growth
things. Tomorrow, Tony. I know you can't wait.
No, I was going to give you guys the day off.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 223 is a bill introduced by the Department of Revenue, and what it intends to do basically is to exempt councils of governments, CODs, from the requirements of local budget law. The local budget law allows or asks all the governments, local governments, to submit their budgets to the Department of Revenue, and they will be certified to levy taxes. However, when those entities, the CODs, are not levying taxes or imposing taxes, they don't or should not be asked to do that, and that's what this bill is supposed to do. In that format, it doesn't have any fiscal impact or a revenue impact to it.
Makes sense to me.
Mr. Phillips, are you... Is anyone else signed up? And given who's here and who's not here, we might just go quick on this one and might have a bill.
Okay. John Phillips of the Department of Revenue, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. We're just responding to a bill that was passed last session that added levy authority for these types of intergovernmental agencies. And typically what we see in the statutes is those districts and entities that levy are comply with local budget law, and those that don't. We've been receiving budgets from these entities for years, and we have no regulatory authority over them. So we're just saying in years that they don't levy, we're not interested in getting budgets and then mailing them on to the Secretary of State. And for years that they do, then they'd be subject to the same local budget law process, which is sort of that public procedure open forum that other entities are responsible for complying with. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Questions, Senator Starr?
Thanks. This doesn't preclude them from the process of having budget meetings at the local level where citizens input their... I mean, this is basically their interaction with the Department of Revenue. It doesn't do anything with an intergovernmental agency dealing with their budget as it relates to their duties back at home, so to speak.
Chair Deckard, Senator Starr, no, it does not. These entities, there is local budget law, was a detailed set of procedural requirements, and then there is a kind of a pared down, if you will, local budget law for entities under these definitions. So they still are required to have a budget committee. They're all subject to public meetings law, and so it wouldn't change that. It just doesn't. There's just no. There's no critique by department. There's no risk that their levy might be unconstitutional, since if they don't levy, then they're not subject to that. So it wouldn't change their requirements, other than for non-levying entities, they wouldn't have to file their budget with the department.
Thank you. Close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 223.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ringo.
I move that Senate Bill 223 pass to the House with a pass the Senate. Sorry.
pass recommendation.
A do pass
recommendation.
Rookie fever here.
Yeah.
Someone's going to be carrying this bill, you know.
I think we should do the Senator Hammond, since he missed the discussion.
Oh, that's you. You're absolutely right.
Okay.
Senator Ringo has moved Senate Bill 223 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Any discussion?
Any objection?
Or
Senator Hannon, if you would be willing to carry this bill,
not really.
Consent agenda.
Not really. I don't know anything about it.
Senator Ringo will carry the
bill.
It'll be on
consent.
So
He doesn't know anything about it.
Open a hearing on...
Mingo was here and doesn't know anything about the bill.
Senate Bill 224.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 224 is also the Department of Revenue bill, and basically it establishes in law for the omitted properties, the centrally assessed omitted properties. These are the properties that are assessed by the Department of Revenue at the time of establishing those properties back into the rules. Puts a time limit for going back in time for only 5 years. This is to put it in compliance with other statutes. And this time there is no limit, and this would establish that limit for it. And it, in a way, this has been the practice, so it does not generate or have any revenue impact to it, nor it seems to have any fiscal impact.
Thank you.
No impact.
Mr. Phillips.
This is Duncan's.
Again, my name is John Phillips. For the record, I'm with the Department of Revenue. And there are limited circumstances under which the property tax roll can be changed. A couple of them are omitted property, and that term is defined in statute as being any time where the assessor discovers property that, for whatever reason, is not on the tax rolls. And then the instruction to the assessor is that the assessor shall add that property to the tax roll. It doesn't give discretion there. Similar authority exists for the director, and because the director stands in the shoes of the assessor for certain types of property, and in this case we're talking about centrally assessed property, which are utility properties, for example, airlines, electrical, transportation, those kinds of things. And so when the director discovers property via our appraisers, and that property is then to be added to the tax rolls, the language is different between what the assessors add and what the department adds. And all we're saying is that the five-year look back, in other words, the property could have existed for 10 years, but for all other properties, the assessor's limit is 5 years look back to add that property. And so since there's no specificity with the department's properties, then we're suggesting that the taxpayers be treated on equal footing. Do you have to answer any questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Hannon.
Why was it determined 5 years? As an example, some contested cases might go beyond 5 years. Your Department of Revenue has some contested cases, I believe, that have gone beyond that time. Is that true or not?
Chair Deckard, Senator Hannon, that is true. Contested cases can go on for... I've been aware of them going on for decades.
How would they be dealt with adding them back to the tax rolls if you limit this to 5 years?
Once Chair Deckard, Senator Hannon, once a case is being litigated or under appeal, if you will, then at that point in time the taxes for the years in question then are at issue before the court. And if it takes the courts or the litigation process 10 years, then the decision that's finally rendered will affect all of the years since the appeal and the years in question at the time of the appeal. So at the time of the appeal, the assessor or the department then would be limited to 5 years look back at the year in which the property was being added. So let's just give an example. So if property is discovered this year and it's 10 years, it's been in existence for 10 years, then the assessor would add that property for 5 years back. If notice is given in due process...
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Uh-huh. What would happen then between the 5 years and the 10 years, that would be forgiven?
Chair Deckard, Senator Hannon, the period of time for which the property existed prior to that 5 years would be forgiven. Yes, and that's current law. So then what happens at the time, the assessor gives notice to the taxpayer saying, we're aware of property, it's been in existence, we're adding it for the current year plus 5 years back. That taxpayer can then challenge the addition of that property to the tax rolls, and that begins the litigation process, which could go on for a year or 2 years or multiple years. And when the decision is rendered, then the years in question at the time of the appeal are the ones that are finally adjudicated. Does that get to your question?
Well, kind of. Let me ask you this. Let's rephrase this and use another scenario. Say I'm a farmer and I own some agriculture land, and I take it out of agriculture use, and it's in land use zoning process, and it's in a contested hearing between LCDC and the Land Use Board of Appeals, and it goes beyond 5 years. What happens in that situation where agriculture has a mandatory payback provision for the years that it was disqualified?
Chair Deckard, Senator Hannan, that's a very good question. I really don't know how. I know the property tax side of it. I'm not sure how it works out with the land use side of it.
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to ask a question here because litigation sometimes goes beyond just a five-year norm, and it's possible that you would be foreclosing or foregoing revenue that would, in other words, be required during that window of appeal. And I only raise that issue to see if you've considered all those variables.
Chair Deckard, Senator Hannan, I believe the results of the land use decision has potential for affecting the qualification of that property for the special assessment, whether it be farm, forest, any other type of special assessment on that property. But as to whether the property existed or not, it would not necessarily be a matter for, at least not that I'm aware of, would not be a matter for this type of statutory change. This just deals with property that the assessor was not aware of its existence. If you built a house and you didn't get permits, and the assessor was therefore not aware of it, and stumbled upon or drove down the road and noticed that a new house was there, and would add that property to the roll, send you notice and say, we're going to add this house. We checked on it, and it was built 2 years ago, so we'll be correcting this year's roll and 2 years previous roll. I'm not sure I'm aware of a situation where the assessor might notice that, in the event you had farmland and you had changed so that you weren't farming the property anymore, you may no longer be qualified for that special assessment. But as to whether the land's being litigated under a land use decision, I'm not sure that would apply to what this bill is about.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm trying to get a sense of the example that Senator Hannan used, that the changes contemplated in this bill in 224 don't seem, I'm not sure that they would apply to that situation. But Mr. Phillips, maybe you have. I was trying to get clarity on that particular situation. It seems to me that the changes contemplated here would not fit under that definition.
Chair Deckard, not the way I understand the question.
Further questions?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ringo.
Well, to use the example you gave where somebody built a house and that was unknown to the assessor, and they find out about it 2 years later, they can go back. What if they find out about it 7 years later, then what?
Yeah. Chair Deckard, Senator Ringo, then at that point, the assessor has the authority to go back for 5 years.
Right.
And then, and as Senator Hannah pointed out earlier, then that those two additional years would be, I don't know, would you say forgiven or just never accounted for?
No. Mm-hmm.
One part of the omitted property statute that we've sort of noticed is that it really doesn't assign anyone to ascertain intent. And in that respect, the assessor doesn't have to go out and determine whether it was an intentional act to not, you know, pay taxes on their property or whether it was just a simple omission.
Dave.
Senator Farrelly.
Mr. Chairman, I think we can ask the question a different way. Farm deferral defers a property tax for 10 years. If the land owner changes the use of the property, it may be subject to the loss of the farm deferral, which would require the repayment of the deferred taxes for a 10-year period. Nothing in this bill appears to interfere with the ability to recapture that 10-year deferral. And so I guess I'd like confirmation that this doesn't affect a change in land use or the loss of a farm deferral. But this bill only talks about centrally assessed property that was missed on the rolls and then becomes known to the property tax assessor.
Senator Deckard, Senator Farioli, that's absolutely correct. It does in no way affects any of the other timelines for recapturing on a disqualification. We call them disqualifications for whatever special assessment program a property's under, whether it be farm or historic. If they're not complying with the requirements of the program for special assessment, then there's a look back period for a sort of a penalty, if you will, for not complying with the requirements of the specific special assessment. So
and
this would not affect that.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Farrelly.
The clock starts to tick when the assessor notices the property that was omitted from the roll. And he can go back 5 years from the constructive notice that the property was omitted, but not more than five if we pass this bill.
Senator Deckard, Senator Farrelly, for centrally assessed property that if you pass this bill, that would be correct. So that the assessor notices the property is missing, adds it for the current year. It could happen in February. It could happen in November. Adds it for the current year and five previous rolls.
Irrespective, Mr. Chairman, of any litigation that's going on. You can't go past the 5 years.
Senator Deckard, Senator Farrelly, that's correct. It would not matter whether there was litigation or not. It's specific to the property that was omitted. Now, there can be a dispute about the value of the property being added,
sure,
but the existence of the property is what's at issue. And there's also an appeals process for challenges to that, which can drag it out for years.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Senator Ringa.
Thanks.
If we start over on this and help me understand what problem this is trying to solve. I mean, what is the problem out there that this gets to?
Chair Deckard, Senator Ringo, this is a situation where we've got the majority of property is assessed, appraised by the county assessors.
Right.
There's a limited amount of properties that are assessed and appraised by the Department of Revenue. For these centrally assessed properties, the law says, and in your bill on page, first page,
right.
The only page, section 3, starting line 21, it
right.
says, property that's not been assessed shall be assessed.
Right.
And for us, since we're in most cases standing in the shoes of the assessor, we would say, it shall be assessed as admitted property because it's not been assessed. And then the question is, well, how long should it be assessed? And so...
When you say that question, how long should it be assessed? I don't understand that.
Or for how long should the look-back be? Should it be assessed for this current year only and forward, prospectively? Or should it be assessed as in the same authority that the county assessor has for that those properties? So it would be putting properties on an equal footing.
Senator, I think you said that the practice right now is to look back 5 years. Is that right?
Senator Ringo, that's correct.
Well, that's just the informal
that's
practice.
What we've been doing. Because we felt we've been in the shoes of the assessor, the properties, just because they're under our authority to appraise, we should treat them the same.
Do you have any estimate as to the revenue impact of this bill?
Senator Ringo, I do not.
Well, potentially there's something. I mean, if we're at least a few properties will not be assessed beyond 5 years that I presume otherwise would have, correct?
Senator Deckard, Senator Ringo, there are a limited number of properties in the central assessment. They're
a very small number,
and their value is typically quite high. But there are instances where we discover certain types of property or a property right that's taxable, and then we'll add that value. Currently, we're going back 5 years, so if this bill passes,
yeah,
then there would be no change.
Anything. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
We have the authority to instruct the assessor to add property, so we would exercise this authority in line with our other authority in 311-205.
Thank you.
Do you want to, Nazim, do you want to?
Sure. Senator Ringo, the assessors, as in the county assessors at this point, they have this time limit or that window of 5 years, so they can't go beyond that. The assumption before this bill was introduced that the Department of Revenue, the director of the Department of Revenue, when they're centrally assessing those big utilities, are already bound by that 5 years anyhow, by definition. Okay. It only formalizes it in the law, right. So there will be no misunderstanding whether there is a 5-year limit or not.
Okay. Thank you.
There's two citizens and a lobbyist asleep in the back row. I think we better get this bill moving quickly.
Thank you, John.
The citizens and lobbyists asleep in the back row, Mr. Chairman, are not those representing centrally assessed facilities.
They are wide awake.
Anyone else on Senate Bill 224? Close the public hearing. Open a work session on Senate Bill 224.
Mr. Chairman, I will move Senate Bill 224 to the floor with a pass recommendation.
Senator Ferriello has moved Senate Bill 224 to the floor with a due pass. Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Senator Ferrioli, and I don't think we'll put that on the consent agenda. Senator Ferrioli, would you be willing to carry that?
I will, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
what do we have next?
Ow!
137.
I maintain my efficiency of reputation.
New lawyer.
There's three of them on the panel.
None of them are any good. You're
a good lawyer.
There's only one.
That's true.
He said he won't chase an ambulance unless the lights work.
Or it's...
I like when it's moving, too.
Better chance for a twofer.
We will continue the march onward and open a hearing on Senate Bill 147. Mr. Warner.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 147 comes to you as part of the governor's recommended budget, governor's balanced budget. And what it does is permits the State Board of Tax Practitioners to establish a single annual date for all preparers. You have a fiscal office statement in your packet that explains what has been done in the past. And that is that the board has actually had two tax preparer license dates of May 31st and September 30th. They did not recognize until review of their statutes this past year that there was indeed a statute from the 1970s that set the date for renewal on the anniversary of the tax preparer when they had initially file for the license. So, in other words, it would, if you follow the statute strictly, it would be renewal applications coming in throughout the year on the anniversary, which is contrary to practice. And what this bill does is take the practice a step further and have a single date, which would be required for all tax preparers. I've also made a copy of out of the governor's balanced budget on the state board to give you a sense of the size of the board and what their budget is and their full-time equivalent and so forth, just to give you some context. We've typically had, over the last couple of sessions, we've had bills dealing with the board. We also have Mr. Chair Ron Burson here, who is the interim director of the Oregon Board of Tax Practitioners.
Mr. Burson?
While he's coming up, Mr. Chair, we should clarify that this is Governor Lewandowski's budget and not Governor Kitzhaber, so that Republicans don't get confused about who to beat up on. Thank you very much.
I appreciate you clarifying that, Senator Corcoran.
That's my job.
There seemed to be a great deal of confusion.
Senator Ferrioli looked especially confused.
Mr. Burson, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Senator Deckard, members of the committee, good morning, or good afternoon. My name is Ronald Burson. I'm the interim director for the Board of Tax Practitioners. The Board is a consumer protection agency that regulates the licensed tax consultants and tax preparers in the state of Oregon. The Board also protects the consumers from unlicensed personal income tax preparers. I'm appearing today in support of Senate Bill 147. I provide you with written testimony and would like to present the key points of this testimony. This past year, our Assistant Attorney General informed the Board that their current practice of renewing the licenses on specific dates is in conflict with ORS 673.645. This statute states that any licensed tax consultant and tax preparer on or before the anniversary of the issuance of the license of a tax consultant or tax preparer. So again, it goes back to the anniversary date as opposed to the dates we've had set in rule. Since 1979, as best I can tell through my research, the Board has renewed licensed tax consultants on May 31st and licensed tax preparers on September 30th. This is spelled out in Oregon Administrative Rule 800-020-0030. When the rule was proposed, the conflict with the statute was not discovered. Therefore, the practice of renewing the license on the above annual dates has become the practice for the past 23 years. The benefit of Senate Bill 147 is the Board will be able to continue its practice of renewing license at a uniform annual dates known by the licensees. The Board would not have to spend valuable resources to research each license, approximately 5,400 licensees with the Board anniversary date, and inform them of that date and continually throughout the year renew licenses. The resources can be used instead on fulfilling the Board's mission of protecting the consumer. Senate Bill 147 has no fiscal impact if passed. The fiscal impact would be in if it is in not passing the bill. The Board would then be forced to spend its resources on revamping its license renewal process, including reprogramming the Board's data for a new anniversary date at a rate of $75 per hour. According to our programmers, the bad news was given today, it would take approximately 350 hours of programming time to do that. Also, many of the anniversary dates would fall during the Board's examination time frame. A lot of the times we believe that the anniversary dates are around November, December, January, which is when people originally had tested for to become licensed, and therefore we would not only have examinations going on, but we would also have renewals going on at the same time. The Board has received support of the bill by the licensees and their associations, the Oregon Association of Tax Consultants, the Oregon Association of Independent Accountants, the Oregon Society of Tax Consultants, and the Oregon Society of Enrolled Agents. Passage of this bill will allow the Board to continue to renew its licenses in the manner for which it has done for over 20 years and continue to manage its resources towards the mission of protecting the consumer. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Burson.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hannon.
The current renewal I read here is May 31st and September 30th.
Chair Deckard. Senator Hannon, yes, sir.
And what would be the new renewal date?
Chair Deckard, Senator Hannon, the renewal dates would stay exactly the same as the rule. The statute, the change in the statute would allow us to renew per the rule that's already established, the 820-0030, which is tax consultants on May 31st, tax preparers on September 30th.
Well, I noticed that you got into a financial situation where you had to borrow some money from the Department of Revenue because of licensing changes in the last session. Is that correct?
Chair Deckard, Senator Hannon. Yes, the Board of Tax Practitioners borrowed money, I believe, from the Department of Treasury. I was not the director at the time, and again, I'm the interim director. Yes, they borrowed
okay.
Money.
Is this bill going to create any licensing time lag as you make the conversion, or is everything going to occur fairly easily for the revenue necessary to run your agency?
Chair Deckard, Senator Hannon, I believe by passing this bill, there will be no change in how the Board of practitioner handles their revenue cash flow. There shouldn't be any changes. They're going to renew on the same dates they renewed in every other year they've been a licensee, and we shouldn't see any changes. The problems we had with the revenue shortfall before did not have to do with our cash flow. It may have been some other instances of some unforeseen costs that hit the board. Again, with a small budget that the board has, sometimes those unforeseen costs are hard to pick in.
Okay. And one last question. Are you going to be in asking for any more fee increases? I noticed the fees were increased, in the 2001 session?
Chair Deckard, Senator Hannah, we will not be asking for any fee increases during this legislative session. We did ask for them previously, and we will operate on the same license fees as we have in this last biennium.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Farrelly?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this is proof positive that the tax code is just too difficult for us to follow. We've all sat in these committees and heard that agencies sometimes exceed the statutory authority of their administrative rules. Our answer should be to at least make the rule consistent with the statute. In this case, we're going to make the statute consistent with the rule.
Okay. Brother?
Mr. Person, you have unanimity amongst your board.
Yes, sir.
Great. Close.
You could use such big words.
That's an old expertise.
I thought you said anonymous. Anonymity.
Anonymity is what I heard.
Unanimity.
Strategery.
Work session.
Thank you, Mr. President. Open the Senate, the work session on Senate Bill 147.
Yeah, no interest.
Everybody's afraid of this one.
Mr. Chair? I will carry this bill.
Okay, we'll all move it then.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you can move the bill. For unanimous consent. You know that you can do that. Did you move the bill?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr?
I'd move Senate Bill 147 to support the House recommendation.
Oh. Senate Bill 147 has been moved to the floor with a do pass.
Any discussion?
Any objections? So ordered. And with that committee, we have concluded another unanimous day of Senate revenue. Tomorrow we have a few more just non-controversial bills up for the committee.
Tough room, Mr. Chairman.
Consent agenda items. So with that, we are adjourned. That's where we're going.